No surprise here, but you know I gotta have my devices when I travel. I would be lost without my smartphone. I use it for directions, to find things to do, and most importantly, where to eat. I rely on it as a digital music player to enhance my experience as I explore a new place. Oh, and sometimes I even use it to make calls and stuff. That's the kind of traveler I am. And if you travel, you know what kind you are, too. That's why you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm an editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as always, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Just remember what your old friend Jack Burton says. Yes, sir, the check is in the mail.
All right, then.
That's from Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, okay.
It's a great movie. It has nothing to do with our podcast today.
No, because we're actually going to talk about the iPhone 4.
Yes, this was a topic that we have received many, many, many requests about. In fact, we received requests about it before the iPhone 4 debuted. And here's a secret for you guys. We don't get pre-release devices ever.
Yep.
Really. We don't have companies send us these things. We don't review them. So it's hard for us to report on things that haven't come out yet because we don't get our hands on them ourselves. We have to rely on information just like most of you do. But now that the iPhone 4 has been out for a while and for a while being a couple of days, we can kind of talk a little bit about it and what makes it different from the previous iPhones. Now, we are going to avoid, for the most part, discussions of iOS 4 because we're going to do that in a separate podcast since the operating system works on devices besides just the iPhone 4.
That's correct.
So we're mostly going to look at the hardware here, and we may talk about a couple of features that are iOS 4, features, but they're unique to the iPhone 4 right now.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start by talking about how it's different from previous iPhones. And if you were to set an iPhone 4 next to an iPhone 3GS, you would notice some differences right away.
Yes, for one thing, it's flat like Ann Halibut.
Yes, and Ann Halibut. His name is Eric. So the old iPhone 3G and 3GS, and actually every design up until the iPhone 4, had kind of a rounded back.
Yes.
Which meant that it wouldn't sit flat when you set it down on a table.
Well, sort of flat.
Yeah, well, not. It kind of wobbled a little bit because it was rounded just enough so that it would kind of not sit perfectly flat. And some people thought that was irritating. Some people didn't care. In fact, a lot of the reviews I've read where they've talked about the design, they've said, you know, we didn't have any issues with the old design, but it is kind of cool to see a new design.
Yes.
You know, Apple is moving forward. They're not resting on their laurels.
Well, this one is flat.
Yeah.
Like in flat. On both sides.
Right. And glass on both sides.
That's true. Unlike previous versions, the iPhone 4 has glass on both sides. It's 0.37 inches thick, 4.5 inches tall, 2.31 inches wide, weighs 4.8 ounces. Has a 3.5-inch display with 326 pixels per inch. And the glass, by the way, is aluminum-based ceramic glass. It's very, very tough, although, you know, don't go playing soccer with it because it will break. If you drop your iPhone 4 and it breaks and you say, well, TechStuff said it was really tough. I think when they say really tough, they're saying, well, we figure you're eventually going to put it in a pocket with your keys. And it might win a fight with your keys or your cat's claws, but it probably will not win a fight with a set of concrete steps.
It might not even win a fight with your keys over a prolonged prolonged use. Here's the thing is that the iPhone 4 is brand new. So it's really – until people have had this for a while and these phones have had some pretty good use –
We're not really going to know for sure.
Yeah, we're not going to know. It may be that these scratches show up in time, but it seems to be a pretty hardy design so far. Also, that glass we talked about, it has an oleophobic coating.
Yes.
Which is supposed to kind of keep smudges away. It's supposed to, you know, the oleophobic means that the oils in your skin aren't supposed to be able to cling to that glass. It's supposed to not accumulate. But from what I've seen, it's a smudge magnet.
If it's like the coating on my first generation iPod Touch, it's probably going to do a reasonably decent job at avoiding smudges. If it's more like the coating on my iPad, it will end up needing to be wiped down about every 23 seconds or so.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's going to be more like the iPad. So the especially from what I've been reading, I don't own an iPhone 4.
Nor do I.
So we can't really talk about this from personal use perspective. I have held one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where was that?
I got friends who own one.
You've been cheating on me.
I can't
with other people who know things about tech.
I've got some friends who are Apple fanatics.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I like Apple. All right. I know I got the anti-Mac bias rep early on in tech stuff, but that's just not true. But I'm not a fanatic. You know, I don't go out there and buy the product as soon as it hits the market. I do that for Android. That's not entirely true.
I've never stood in a line for an Apple product.
Yeah.
Actually, that's not true. That was the very first iMac in 1998. That was the last time I stood in a line.
So you're older and wiser now,
yes.
Or at least older.
Well, I just don't feel like standing in a line anymore.
So you're older and lazier now.
That's it.
So it's a neat little device. I mean, it's you know, it's nice design. I like it a lot.
Well, they have made quite a few improvements to it. For example, the camera.
Yes, it's a 5-megapixel camera.
Yes, it has a larger. The most important thing, since we've done the megapixel myth busting in our previous podcast, it has a larger image sensor.
Yeah, it's got really good color detection and contrast features as well. From what I understand, the pictures that you take with this camera do tend to be very sharp, and the colors are very true to what the actual colors are. So apparently, you know, as a camera in a phone, it serves quite well. And in fact, we should go ahead and say there's not just one. There are two.
There are two
lenses.
But the one on the back that traditionally use, I guess, if you will, for taking photos that you might, say, upload to Flickr or, you know, put on your Facebook profile. That's the big one. That's got the larger photo size and photo sensor on it.
So yeah, there's a forward-facing and a back-facing camera. The forward-facing camera is used for other features like FaceTime. Well, you can also use the back-facing camera for FaceTime if you want to, and we'll get into FaceTime in a little bit. That's one of those iOS 4 features that is unique right now to the iPhone 4.
Yes.
I'm sure eventually it'll come to other devices, but right now the iPhone 4 is the only thing that can run it.
Before we leave the camera thing, though,
yes.
I feel like I should mention the LED.
Oh, yes, it has a flash.
I feel like if it's an LED, maybe we should put flash in quotes, but it does function that way. You can turn it on even for video mode.
Yeah.
If you want to record video, you can use your iPhone 4 for that purpose. Hello, let me trip over that.
Yep.
And you can use the LED flash to take still photos or leave it on for video recording.
Yeah, so now you don't have to worry about those low light situations as much where, you know, you take the photo and then eventually you look at it and you realize you can't make out any of the details. The LED should help a little bit with that. Now, granted, you're still not going to be able to go into pitch black and rooms and take a picture and expect full detail, but it'll help. You were mentioning the display, the 326 pixels per square inch display.
Yes.
It's the full resolution is 940 by 640 pixels.
Mm-hmm.
That 326 pixels per square inch, when Jobs announced this at the Worldwide Developers Conference,
mm-hmm.
He called it a retina display.
Yes.
And the claim was that the human eye is only capable of detecting around 300 pixels per inch at a distance of around 10 or 11 inches from your face.
Mm-hmm.
That's not entirely true. Your ability to detect that kind of resolution, the number of pixels per inch, depends on several factors, the main one being distance from your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, between like 9 and 12 inches, it may be somewhere in the realm of 400 pixels per inch. That's not to say that the display isn't gorgeous. It is beautiful. It's probably the best-looking display I've ever seen on a phone.
Wow, really?
So
I still haven't seen one in person yet.
I have not seen the Evo, which has a very good screen as well.
Yeah, I've heard good things about that one.
But out of all the ones I have seen, it is the sharpest image I've ever it's beautiful. The yes. colors are very vibrant. You don't really see that pixelation that you can see on a lot of other devices. So even though the claim that it's a greater resolution than the human eye can possibly detect is probably not entirely accurate,
mm-hmm.
I don't think it matters. That's nitpicking.
Yeah.
Like if I were to stand up and say, Mr. Jobs, I beg to differ. At 10 inches, I can detect 407 pixels per inch, and that's greater than your 320 whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I would expect to be ejected immediately from the conference because that is nitpicking. The display is amazing. Another thing that you'll notice if you're just looking at the phone before you've even turned it on.
Oh, yes.
It has buttons.
Yes, it does have buttons.
Yeah. Something that you don't expect to see on an Apple device necessarily. They try to get away from that as much as possible. But yeah, it has dedicated volume up and volume down buttons as opposed to the little mono button that it used to have.
Yeah. Yeah. They found out that people actually want that, I think.
Yeah. I think it just works better. Also, another thing that is noticeable is that it has sort of an aluminum border along the edge.
Well, it's not actually aluminum.
No, it's not, but that's what it looks like.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's actually, that serves as an antenna, actually two antennas.
Yes, it does.
There's one that's the Wi-Fi Bluetooth antenna, one that's the Edge 3G antenna.
Mm-hmm.
This also has caused some issues, which I guess we can talk about really quickly. It turns out that if you hold the phone a certain way, known as now and forever the wrong way, that you could bridge the gap between these two antenna.
Mm-hmm.
And by bridging the gap, you sort of create one long antenna. And the thing about antenna, one of the things about antenna is that the length of the antenna helps determine how efficient that antenna is at picking up the signals.
Right.
It needs to be a particular length in order to pick up certain frequencies of radio signals efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
So if you hold the phone in a certain way so that you're bridging that gap, you've created a long antenna. It's not as efficient at picking up signals, and you may notice that your reception suffers as a result. People
right.
have said that, you know, they'll look at the phone, it'll have, let's say, 4 bars of reception,
mm-hmm.
and then they pick the phone up and they look at it, and it either loses 1 or 2 bars immediately. Well, it's because they're bridging that gap. Apple's response to this, Steve Jobs' response to this, actually, in an email, was, you're holding it wrong, so either don't hold it that way or buy one of our Apple iPhone 4 cases
yeah.
that will create, you know, by putting it in the case, you no longer are going to have contact with the antenna. You won't make that
right.
problem happen. This has caused some journalists to criticize Apple.
Sure.
Because it's the first time that they've offered an actual Apple case.
Right.
For one of their products, for sale for one of their products.
And not the only time, but yeah. They have that bumper, and it does appear, you know.
In the sense that it's not instead of going with the third party thing, they've gone, this is an Apple produced case that is supposed to solve this problem, and it's an additional $30.
For the, say, conspiracy theorists, they might say, oh, so you're not going to give us a free bumper, which is what Apple's calling it.
Right.
So you're automatically – you knew about this and you're doing this. This is what some conspiracy theorists
might say. Or they're just saying like, oh, so what you're telling us is you've got a flaw in your design, and instead of fixing it or giving us a fix, the legitimate customers, you're telling the customers like, oh, well, here's the device, but if you want it to work, you need to buy this. It's almost like extortion.
Right.
That's what some people are criticizing Apple about.
Sure.
Now, personally, I did not notice this because I did not know about that particular issue when I was handling the iPhone 4. So I didn't even think to look for it. I had not heard about it. So I can't report from personal experience if it's, you know, the case or not.
Well, apparently it seems to affect people who are left-handed a little bit more frequently.
Yes, and I am of the sinister persuasion, so it would hit me.
And apparently, from what I read, there is a left-handed group that
group.
Yeah, that sent a criticism to Apple about it. For what it's worth, and I mean, I haven't used it, and I don't know if there's anything, wrong, if they're actually doing something for nefarious purposes or not. But let's just say it's part of the design. Ars Technica actually talked to an organization known as Antennasys. They're involved with mobile device antennas. And basically they asked them, you know, is this legitimate? Is there, you know, something strange going on? And apparently from what Antennasys told Ars Technica, the iPhone 4 isn't the only phone to have some kind of problem along these lines. Partly this is because of FCC restrictions on where radiation can emit from a phone.
Mm-hmm.
They try to put the antenna toward the bottom, away from your head, toward where your jaw would be. And thinking back on it, my Motorola Razr back a couple years ago when I used one of those, the antenna is, if I'm not mistaken, down toward the bottom, the fat end of the phone where the microphone is as well, because they don't want that up near your brain, I guess. So apparently others like the HTC Droid Incredible and Google's Nexus One Android phone and some Nokia phones also have a version of this problem where the antenna is placed on the outside of the case and you can actually touch it and create that antenna circuit problem, and it will cause reception problems and possibly dropped calls. But it's not just – apparently it also has to do with the way the manufacturer tries to get around the FCC regulations and, you know, work with that. And it has a lot to do with a lot of different people apparently. But certain phones, including the iPhone 4, have that problem.
Right. Now, we've talked a lot about what's on the outside of this device. Why don't we dive into the device a little bit and talk about some of the stuff that makes it go.
Okay, like maybe the gyroscope?
I was going to actually start with the processor.
Oh, let's go with the processor.
Because,
then,
you know, it's a 1 gigahertz ARM Cortex A8 chip. It's the same thing that you find in the iPad.
Except Ars Technica says that it does not move quite as quickly. It's not as brisk as the iPad's processor, at least in their testing.
It does things
almost as fast, but it is not as fast. Now, maybe that's a result of having the other iPhone guts in there and it's having to run all that other stuff.
Yeah, it could be.
But it also may not be quite as fast. But yeah, Apple says it's a 1 gigahertz processor.
Yeah. It's got 512 megabytes of RAM. Now we're going to go into the whole gyroscope thing. Now, so it has an accelerometer like the previous iPhones,
you know,
which allows you when you turn it from portrait to landscape, that's what makes the screen flip.
Mm-hmm.
Can sense motion in certain directions. Now it has also a three-axis gyroscope.
Yes, Steve Jobs used in his keynote speech for the announcement of the iPhone 4 to play Jenga in front of a whole auditorium full of people.
Right.
And he got roundly mocked by the tech press for playing Jenga.
Although, from what I understand, the people who were actually there who were not jaded tech journalists thought it was kind of cool. Because they were developers. They were looking at it not from, oh, this is such a goofy little demo. They were thinking of, oh my gosh, what are the potential uses for this technology?
Well, yes, maybe Jenga is not the most useful application for adding a gyroscope, but it does give you much more control, much more precision over the control that you can, the motion controls in the iPhone.
So the gyroscope gives you pitch, yaw, and roll.
I love yaw.
Yaw. And the accelerometer helps, when paired with the accelerometer and the gyroscope, you've got a six-axis controller.
Yes.
And, you know, you have motion detection along six different axes.
Yes.
Of motion. So that means that developers can create games or other applications that can really take advantage of this in ways that the previous iPhones could not handle. And it's also it's starting to sound a lot like things like the Wiimote and the Sony's Move controller, which also have these gyroscopes and accelerometers in them in order to translate your motions into actions in a virtual environment. So now the iPhone 4 could theoretically do the same sort of stuff. I would not be surprised to eventually see iPhone type apps that would allow you to control console-based actions.
Yes.
It might take a while because you're going to have, you know, and I'm sure they would be branded by whatever company it was that was, you know, running the console. But but think about that. You could actually theoretically, because of the capabilities of this phone, you could turn it into a video game controller for a specific console.
Well, the iPhone's already been used to some degree as a controller.
Yeah.
For different applications.
And for remotes. Mm-hmm. You could use it as a remote controller for certain electronic devices. So, it's not unheard of.
But this will make it far more functional in that regard.
Now, so. I don't know if anyone would ever go through the trouble to actually do that. I mean, but it's a potential. Yeah, it's not unheard of. So it also has there was something else. The battery. Yeah, I was going to talk about the battery life.
Yes.
So one of the things about the iPhone 4 is that the battery life is actually much longer than than previous iPhones.
Uh-huh.
In fact, even though it's a thinner device, the weight of the phone might surprise some people. They think like, oh, it should be lighter than the old iPhones because it's thinner.
It's about the same.
Yeah, and some people think that the reason why it's about the same is because the battery is actually larger. Mm-hmm. So even though it's lost some girth, it's still the same weight because of the battery. Apple says that the battery will give you up to 7 hours of talking time without a need to recharge, or 6 hours of browsing if you're on a 3G network, or 10 hours of browsing if you're on Wi-Fi, and over 300 hours of standby power.
Okay.
Which is pretty awesome.
Ars Technica found about 25 hours of general use. Video about 11.5, music about 25 to 30. If you're playing,
see now this is what's kind of interesting, because Apple's claims are way lower than those numbers.
Yeah,
but I guess that's part of the thing is that, you know, they don't want to make a claim and then have someone come out with it saying, oh, it's nowhere near that.
And I wouldn't want to either. I understand why they would do that. The recharge cycle too that they found was about 1.5 hours. Which really not bad.
No. At all. No, not bad at all. That is phenomenal. I mean, you know what? As much as I've said, like, I'm not really that interested in getting an iPhone or whatever, the iPhone 4, a lot of the features have me interested in, I mean, I've thought about the potential of, once my contract is up, moving to AT&T and getting an iPhone.
That would be a good segue, because I was going to add this point.
Yeah.
Last night, the day that we're recording this, the rumors started breaking last night. Bloomberg Business Week said that they had heard rumors that Apple might be bringing the iPhone 4 to Verizon's network.
Now, we've
which would
heard
be a departure from AT&T being the exclusive provider here in the United States.
Right. Now, and we should point out a couple things. First of all, Well, first of all, rumor. Second of all, we are aware that in other countries, the iPhone can be found on multiple carriers within certain countries.
Right. That's
which is
not
awesome.
The case here.
Not in the United States. Yeah, in the United States, AT&T is the only network that that carries the iPhone. There was an exclusivity agreement that I had heard originally spanned 5 years, and it was signed in 2007, which would mean that we'd still have a couple years to go before we see the iPhone on any other carrier.
But it's really never been made public exactly how long that agreement is.
Right. So the 2012 figure may be made up of out of thin air, right? It may be that that's not accurate and that we could see an iPhone on Verizon by the end of the year. However, I will also say that these same rumors have been around ever since the iPhone debuted.
Yes, that's true. A lot of people have been itching to see this happen.
So we're talking 3 years of rumors of the iPhone going somewhere else, and so far it's stayed put.
You know, one of the aspects I've seen added to that rumor is that it would be on Verizon's LTE network. That's 4G communication. It's a competitor to WiMAX. I think we've talked about it at least once on our podcast. And the thing is, Verizon's network, 4G network, is currently being built out. Also, there are no LTE phones here in the United States yet. So I don't know that it would happen like
Sprint has one.
Do they really?
Yeah. Sprint has an LTE phone.
Okay. Because when I was reading this, I had seen something that said there weren't any
Or is it
yet.
A WiMAX phone? It might be. Actually, I think it's a WiMAX phone.
WiMAX. Yeah, well, that's
Sprint
4G,
is,
but
Sprint
it's not.
Sprint is WiMAX, yeah. So it's a 4G phone. It's just not an LTE
phone. It's not an LTE phone. Good, because, you know, I actually read it in a legitimate news outlet. The thing is
I only get my news from illegitimate outlets.
But
the guy down the street tells me stuff.
Richard dies of scum and villainy. no, it, that would be a thing, though. If you're expecting it, you know, hey, it's January 1st, 2011. Where's my Verizon iPhone 4? Well, it probably if that's contingent, if the rumor is contingent on that happening, it's probably not going to be the very, very first part of next year, because there's a lot of work to be done building out the network to make it to provide support for it.
Well, not only that, but even if it's not. Like
I wouldn't hold
the other big deal is that the iPhone runs on GSM technology.
Yeah, the current
Verizon,
one would be
and Verizon uses CDMA, and whereas
3G network,
right? But you have to imagine that a phone cannot be exclusively 4G.
I can't imagine why you would want to limit yourself to a network you're building out that way. Now.
Right, exactly. Just like phones right now, 3G phones are not exclusively 3G. They also run on the 2G
networks.
Networks. Because if you made them exclusively 3G, you'd be very limited in where you could use that phone.
Yes.
So,
and for phone calls, that's not really so much of an issue. It's more of an issue for data.
It can be an issue, though. Let's say because it's a cell phone, it's portable, so you can move in and out of networks very quickly. And there's some areas that have a lot of 3G support, but not all of them. Like in Atlanta, there are very you can go through a neighborhood and go from a 3G supported area to 2G.
Well, what I mean is, if you're going to use it to make phone calls, switching from a 3G network to a 2G network isn't nearly as critical of an issue,
right,
as it would be if you're surfing the web and then. You know, you move to a 2G network and then,
because then you slow down significantly.
Yeah.
I was just talking
about
dropping a call perspective.
Oh, yeah. Switching, moving from one tower to another, sometimes the handoff is not so sweet.
It's not completely smooth.
And that's the case for pretty much everybody, I think. That's not limited to phone
or
network
carrier.
Carrier.
But anyway, so GSM is the technology that AT&T and T-Mobile use in the United States. It's also the technology that's most widely used throughout the rest of the world, whereas Verizon and Sprint both run CDMA technology. So it's and the two are not compatible. And we've talked about that in Tech Stuff before as well.
That is correct.
So for the iPhone 4 to go to Verizon, it would also mean that you would need a CDMA chip in there instead of a GSM chip, or in addition to. And I'm guessing, just based upon the form factor, that there's not a whole lot of room to squeeze in extra components, so you would have to switch them out. So you wouldn't be able to buy an iPhone 4 with no contract with AT&T and then port it over to Verizon.
Now, you can see that with the Google Nexus One Android phone.
Yeah.
Because there is one that can be used on CDMA and there's one that can be used on GSM, but, you know, you can't
go
have one
back and forth between the two, right. And by the way, you can buy an iPhone 4 without a contract if you want to, but that doesn't mean that you can move it to a different network. It just means that you're paying month to month as opposed to agreeing to a 2-year deal with AT&T. I guess we should mention that there are two different capacity versions of the iPhone 4.
Right.
There's the 16 gigabyte and the 32 gigabyte.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, that the reason you need those larger sizes, because, you know, before it used to be like 8 gigabytes was the big one. Now that they can capture video in a higher resolution, and you can also do some video editing on the iPhone 4, you need that extra space.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you just run out pretty quickly. Also, they switched from SIM to micro SIM.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
For the iPhone 4. Right. And again, the reason for that, at least what Steve Jobs says the reason for that, is so that they can make more room for the battery.
Right.
So they had to go to micro SIM instead of keeping it. So you can't use your old SIM card in the iPhone 4 unless you shave it down.
I'm going to look this up real quick, too, but I'm willing. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Apple did the same thing with the iPad, that the 3G has a micro SIM in it. But I'm not 100% certain. I'm looking that up as we talk.
All right. Well, then I will also mention that if you are curious as to how much radiation you are absorbing when you use your iPhone 4, according to the report I read in CNET, it has a SAR rating of 1.17 watts per kilogram, which is underneath the 1.6 watts per kilogram limit in the United States.
Wow. And yes, the Wi-Fi and 3G version of the iPad uses a micro SIM card tray as well. So I'm wondering if Apple's – I mean, obviously it's more important for the iPhone than it would be for an iPad. But it seems to me that Apple's probably standardizing, as it usually does with things like this. They pick a format and go, okay, this is the one that we need for this purpose, so let's make it universal so we don't have to mess with the other stuff.
Let's talk very quickly before we wrap this up.
Sure.
I wanted to talk about one specific function of the iPhone 4 that is not found in any other Apple product right now, which is FaceTime.
Oh, yes.
I mentioned it earlier in the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So FaceTime is the video calling software that is included with iOS 4, and only the iPhone 4 supports it.
Right.
You can only use it with a fellow iPhone 4 user.
At this point.
As of the time that we're recording this podcast, there are very strict limitations on the FaceTime. You can use either the front or back-facing camera when you're using it once you make your call.
Yes.
But you can only call other iPhone 4 users, and you can only do it over Wi-Fi. You cannot do it over the 3G or Edge networks.
Yes.
So if you want to make one of these calls, you have to be in a Wi-Fi hotspot, and you have to call another iPhone 4 user.
Yes.
We expect that will probably change over time, especially as Apple introduces new products. I mean, we may eventually see an iPod Touch that has a camera, or what I think is the most realistic development is we'll see an iPad with a camera that will allow you to make the video calls.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that this feature is pretty neat. I hear that the video is not bad. There's not a whole lot of issues with clipping and that kind of stuff. It's not necessarily the highest resolution that you've ever seen, although if you're using the back-facing camera, the quality will be a little bit better. You just won't be able to see the other person.
Right.
At which point I'm wondering why you're bothering with a video call in the first place. But it seems like it's a pretty cool feature. Now, I don't know how other developers are going to respond to the whole FaceTime thing, like mm-hmm. developers like, let's say, people behind Skype, where you think, well, why are you allowing this Apple-backed video calling service, but you won't allow necessarily the Skype version? Like, why can't we tap into that same thing?
Right.
And
currently, the Skype version is only for voice.
Right, so you can't do the video call
mm-hmm.
right now. So it remains to be seen how that plays out, whether or not FaceTime will be opened up enough so that other developers can take advantage of that and build in new features, or whether or not it'll get opened up to the point where people who are on other devices that aren't even owned by Apple, if they can do video calls with someone who has an iPhone 4.
Yes.
That would really surprise me to see that. I would be shocked if, let's say that there's an Android handset that comes out that also has a camera that also can do video calls.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I mean, this is not the first phone that could do video calls.
Right.
There have been other ones before it. It would really shock me if Apple opened it up enough so that the Android user and the iPhone user could do a video call between the two.
Or if somebody else came out with an Android app that would work on, say, a BlackBerry, like a third-party software developer that came out with something that worked on BlackBerry, Nokia, Android, and they wanted to put it in the iPhone App Store, whether Apple would actually go, no.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll have to keep an eye out on that. But that's the skinny on the iPhone 4. Hope that satisfies all of you people who have written in multiple times asking us to do an iPhone 4 podcast. It does look like a pretty cool device, and I admittedly I am tempted to switch over once my contract is up, assuming there's not some amazing Android device available for me to upgrade to.
Well, you know, since I'm still holding off on the smartphone thing, I'll just keep watching and see what happens. But I do think that the iPhone is the kind of device that ups the ante for everyone else, which is good, I think, because yeah. I think it will also inspire the HTC and Motorola and some of the others to continue building fantastic new devices with more and more capabilities. And it's, you know, it's going to be good for the market in general, I think, to have new devices with better technology like that.
So. Competition is always a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
So that wraps up this discussion. If you guys have any questions, if you want us to cover any other specific kind of technology, let us know. You can write us. Our email address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
If you're a Tech Stuff fan, be sure to check us out on Twitter. TechStuffHSW is our handle, and you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TechStuffHSW.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the new TechStuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
No surprise here, but you know I gotta have my devices when I travel. I would be lost without my smartphone. I use it for directions, to find things to do, and most importantly, where to eat. I rely on it as a digital music player to enhance my experience as I explore a new place. Oh, and sometimes I even use it to make calls and stuff. That's the kind of traveler I am. And if you travel, you know what kind you are, too. That's why you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the crazy surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.